Now let me introduce our last keynote speaker, Marianne Bailey. Ms. Bailey is the Principal Director, Deputy CIO for Cybersecurity Department of Defense. She is responsible for ensuring the department has a well-defined and well-executed cybersecurity program, and is also responsible for coordinating cybersecurity standards, policies, and procedures with other federal agencies, coalition partners, and industry. She will talk about the Department of Defense cybersecurity. Let's welcome Ms. Bailey.
I have no slides. Nope, I have no slides. Yep, I've got a break protocol. I have no slides. So I want to thank Phil for asking that broader question, because we're going to get a lot broader when I'm standing up here. And I just really wanted to come here today. Thank you very much for inviting me and talk to you about what we're doing across the Department of Defense to address cybersecurity. Our primary goal in cybersecurity is dependable mission execution in the face of cyber warfare by a capable adversary. So one of the things that I kind of want to say to you are that these are very interesting times in the cybersecurity world, as you all know. I've been in this business for a very long time, back to things like ComSec, CompuSec, InfoSec, IA, now the buzzword is cybersecurity. And what I would like to tell you, though, is that I think there's a focus on cybersecurity at the most senior levels of the government across the department like I have never seen in my entire career. Probably not surprising, because you see it every day in the newspaper, you hear about it every day on the radio as you're driving to work. And I'm in the White House in my current job. I'm in the White House a couple times a week. We're talking about cybersecurity for the nation. I'm meeting with 3 stars and 4 stars in the services, not in the IT field, talking about cybersecurity and weapon systems. So the problem is extremely pervasive, and in the Department of Defense, we're looking very hard on how we solve this problem. So I'm going to talk to you today. I have a speech written. That's kind of how we do things in the DoD, as I found out. And so I have a speech written, and I'll try to deviate a little bit and add some anecdotes to it. So we have 3 central components in our approach to cybersecurity in the Department of Defense. The first one is establishing a culture of cyber discipline. Not a simple thing. If you look at all these types of adversarial attacks that we've had recently, there's been a human in the loop that's kind of caused the problem. Moving to the right side of cyber economics is another one of our key thrusts, and building a layered cyber enterprise. We're also, Mr. Terry Halverson is the CIO, very strong advocate for partnering with industry. In no way does he think the government has a handle on how to secure and how to solve these problems. And so we've done a lot of work with industry in the IT sector. And cryptography plays a critical role in the DoD cyber strategy, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit. So before I really get into these overarching cybersecurity initiatives that we have, I want to just kind of introduce the Department of Defense. And many of you probably know this, but I just wanted to throw out some statistics. I always kind of find them interesting the first couple times I've heard them. Why the challenge is so hard for us in the DoD to secure our infrastructure, our data, educate our individuals. So today, the Department of Defense has over 1.4 million active duty men and women, 718,000 civilians, 1.1 million National Guard and Reserve members, 450,000 of our employees are overseas. We have several hundred thousand buildings and structures located in more than 5,000 different locations or sites on 30 million acres of land. We have 4 million computers on our unclassified network alone. We are enormous by an enterprise network scale. By our numbers, we are the world's biggest enterprise network. Our IT systems include more than 10,000 operational systems, 20% of which are mission critical, thousands of networks and enclaves, thousands of email servers, firewalls, proxy servers, other items of this nature. More than 500,000 devices in use, including about 260,000 smartphones. Our IT budget last year was nearly $37 billion in fiscal year 2015, and we spent more than $5 billion on cybersecurity. If DoD was ranked alongside corporations, we would be one of the largest IT companies in the world. So all of that goes to prove that securing the department's complex, expansive IT environment is very complicated. And so we're looking at how do we adapt to this new realistic operational environment. As many of you in this audience know too well, cyber intrusions and attacks by both state and non-state actors have increased dramatically in recent years. These attacks put all of us and our missions and information at risk. You can just look at the office, the OPM brief, Office of Personnel Management breaches. We kind of classify them as two different breaches. One affected 4 million federal civilian employees. The second one, which we're kind of living through at the moment, and we haven't even begun to understand the ramifications of it, over 21 million individuals who lost all their personnel information, anybody that's ever applied for a background investigation. And that's pretty sobering when we look at what our adversaries have taken. And then very recently, we had attacks on our joint staff unclassified network, which resulted in us having to take the network offline for a few weeks. So all of these examples underscore the importance of cybersecurity. Our adversaries continue to adapt and evolve in response to our cyber countermeasures. They threaten our networks and our systems. Anything with a computer can be cyber attacked. You know, in the past, we always kind of thought of this as an IT problem. Well, those days are long gone. Many things are connected to each other, which increases the ease with which an adversary can attack anything connected to our networks. We're starting to embrace this new operational environment, starting to design, build, and operate to succeed in this setting, but we are not there yet. Moving forward, our organization is pursuing three central components to approach cybersecurity by establishing a culture of cyber discipline, moving to the right side of cyber economics, and building a layered cyber enterprise. Cryptography plays an important role within DoD in the context of today's cyber warfare. So I'm going to spend a few seconds talking about the culture of cyber discipline. Nearly every one of the successful network exploitations that the DoD has had to deal with can be traced to one or more human errors that allowed entry into the network. Raising the level of individual cybersecurity awareness and performance is absolutely paramount. I'm going to give you a little anecdote. I've been involved recently with all of our budget woes in the Pentagon and going forward for money, very rigorous process, as you can imagine, it should be. When we get to what's called a three-star program overview, lots of three stars in the budget arena sitting around a table, and you've got to convince them why you need this money over everybody else in the department that's vying for it. And so our CAPE individuals that do our budget did something very simple. Now, these are not technical folks at all. They're programmers, they're budget people. So he kind of drew this layered defense architecture to explain to them why we need a layered defense architecture, why we need to invest in the perimeter at the regional sites and at our end devices. But the thing he left off of it was a little stick figure, I wanted to say. You need to put that 4.1 million people, you know, stick figure, because any one of them can make a bad decision on any day that really can take us down a really expensive and bad path. So working on this culture of cyber discipline is a huge deal. And we're doing that a lot of ways. We're doing it through training. We're also doing it through forcing some things, which you'll hear a little bit about. This is kind of something that we believe we've ignored for a long time, and we really need to improve human performance and accountability. So the Secretary of Defense's top priority is cybersecurity. We're working very closely across the department with partners like AT&L, Acquisition Technology and Logistics, and U.S. Cyber Command, the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, as well as combatant command services and agencies on an aggressive, multifaceted DoD cybersecurity campaign. The campaign is in direct alignment with the 2015 DoD Cyber Strategy, currently executed through two synchronized efforts. The first effort, which just was signed out last week by the Secretary of Defense, is the DoD Cybersecurity Discipline Implementation Plan. The second one is the DoD Cybersecurity Scorecard. Both of these are critical to achieving the strategic goal of defending information networks, security data, mitigating risk to missions established in the cyber strategy. We are working with support at the highest levels of the department to create a cyber culture and advance cyber discipline through leadership, accountability, and transparency. The DoD Cybersecurity Discipline Implementation Plan has a solid foundation to better measure cyber hygiene and cyber basics. You know, when I was first kind of introducing this to some of my counterparts, and I'm like, you know, don't be wowed about this. This is really cyber basic stuff, and it's the stuff that we're not doing well across the department. And really, we're not doing it well across the nation, to be honest. So DoD CIO and Cyber Command prioritized a list of the most important cyber hygiene efforts, things that must be done well everywhere in order for us to be successful, and eliminate preventable cyber vulnerabilities that can put missions at risk. This includes things like configuring all computers to DoD security standards, ensuring that every computer is defended by an operational organization, and that nothing in our enormous global enterprise has fallen through the operational cracks, and eliminating the use of passwords, by all system administrators and users, and replacing these passwords with the cryptographic identity credentials issued by the DoD PKI. Policy guidance and orders already address everything on this list. So this was nothing new that we came up. We've been putting out orders, IAVAs, all types of things telling folks to do this, but they haven't moved out aggressively enough in this area. We haven't done it well enough. So those lists of important cyber hygiene efforts became the Cybersecurity Discipline Implementation Plan. In that discipline implementation plan, we have four lines of effort: enforcing strong authentication, hardening devices, reducing the attack surface, and reaching 100% CNDSP, computer network defense service provider alignment. To enforce strong authentication, DoD is eliminating the use of usernames and passwords for logon in favor of two-factor authentication, using the cryptographic identity credentials issued by the DoD PKI for both privileged and non-privileged users. That's system administrators and regular users. We're also separating those roles so you can't do your average day job at the same time you're logged in as a system admin. This line of effort, DoD PKI infrastructure, PKI credentials, relies on cryptography to ensure that someone is who they say they are online. The credentials can be resident on the computer or take the form of tokens, and they are issued for each level of access. In the DoD, on the NIPRNet, we're saying they have to be hardware. And we have some issues and we have exceptions coming in. We're getting a lot of complaints when you put out kind of an edict like that, that there's a lot of legacy software that can't be accessed via, hardware tokens, via public key cryptography. So these provide a strong correlation between the user and his public key and offer increased assurance that a user's public key is his or hers and not somebody else's. Based on the level of access authorized to the token, the user is appropriately restricted within the network. In short, PKI certificates leverage cryptography to help the department and cyber defenders recognize users on the network and appropriately manage their access. The second cybersecurity discipline line of effort, device hardening, requires DoD to improve patching practices, reduce email as a vector, and increase host security across the department's information networks. Reducing the attack surface, which is the third cybersecurity discipline line of effort, includes containing internet connections to DoD information networks to approved demilitarized zones, DMZs, and eliminating backdoors and lateral movement within core DoD networks. You heard a little bit about people coming in, spoofing, grabbing somebody's identity, coming in as somebody, getting into the system, privilege escalation. So we see this time and time again. We have to do things that can help us in this environment. And then finally, 100% CNDSP alignment. We need somebody watching. We need somebody knowing what's happening. The last cybersecurity discipline line of effort is the CNDSP, requires alignment of all units or components with an accredited CNDSP and ensuring that CNDSPs have customer network information to respond to incidents. DoD is currently tracking the status of the plan's initial lines of effort and began providing a monthly scorecard to the Deputy Secretary of Defense in June. Every service element does not like this. We are reporting out on every single one of these things that we're tracking. How many users are using PKI? How many of their internet-facing websites are behind DMZs? How many servers do we still have operating Windows 2003? I mean, all these types of things that we're trying to improve. To really measure it, bring it to the highest level in the department, and then begin to force accountability to move to a more secure environment. So these synchronized efforts and the multifaceted cyber campaign plan will empower leaders and hold commanders accountable with new tools to identify and minimize human error, increase mission readiness, and improve processes. In addition, Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff recently signed the DoD Cybersecurity Culture and Compliance Initiative, or DC3I, which outlines how cybersecurity culture will be transformed across the department by improving individual performance and accountability. In short, the cyber discipline plan, the monthly cyber scorecard, the DC3I effort will help the DoD establish a culture of cyber discipline through leadership, accountability, and transparently. So the second of the three central components of our approach to cybersecurity is moving to the right side of cyber economics. Right now, the DoD, much of the nation, is on the wrong side of cyber economic scale. That means an adversary can spend a whole lot less money to attack us, and we incur significant costs to address the incursion. OPM, the Joint Staff, just our recent attacks are, you know, huge examples of how much we have poured millions and millions and millions of dollars into responding from those attacks. And then we have no idea what the outcome is going to be from all the data that's been lost. So by imposing a higher cost on our adversaries for their malicious activities than they had hoped for, will help deter malicious activity. And really, we just want to raise the bar for them. They have to spend a lot more money, and we get better and better. And so it's not simple things that are causing us all this heartache. How do we flip the cyber economic scale? Automation is a huge part of the solution. One of the things that we're doing in the department is something called JRSS, which is a Joint Regional Security Stacks. It's a top priority of our organization. The JRSS is the first or foundational phase of the department's joint information environment. And this, all of this, if you go out and you talk to major companies, the Googles, the HPs, all these big companies, they'll tell you homogeneous infrastructure is the only way that they can solve this problem. We have everything but that in the department. So we're trying to drive very hard to get to a much better homogeneous environment so we really understand what we have. The department has numerous disparate security suites facilitated by separate, individualized, localized service and agency systems, thousands of firewalls that all need to be configured. It's expensive. It's very, very difficult to secure. Transitioning to the regionally based, centrally managed suite of security appliances known as JRSS will simplify and secure this environment, while simultaneously reducing the number of internal and mission owner access points. In particular, JRSS will be the baseline for a more coherent, singular security architecture for our cyber defenders. The third central component of our approach is building a layered cyber enterprise. In the past, we focused a lot on endpoint protection, and while that is extremely important, we cannot, we cannot relax the importance of endpoint protection. We must ensure that our defensive strategy sufficiently counters our cyber adversaries' attack patterns. We need the cyber equivalent of a mission-dependent layered defense looking at perimeter, midpoint, and endpoint solutions. This will ensure that all units work together in an automated fashion and that all tools are integrated to the best defensive posture available at cyber-relevant speeds. One of the big initiatives that we have right now is called Mission Partner Environment. It's another top priority. And it's a vital way in which we're building layered cyber defense. It's an outgrowth from lessons learned with our coalition information sharing operations in Afghanistan, our challenges with effectively collaborating with mission partners in the first several years of that conflict. It's more commercially based. It's a robust mission partner environment. It's a top combatant commander requirement. And the vision behind MPE is to establish a foundational global ability to provide on-demand, classification-specific, common mission networks that remove the need for additional infrastructure builds. The intent is to use a come-as-you-are approach to collaboration with mission partners, leverage their capability. It need not be a U.S.-centric or led approach. Any nation can establish an MPE. So across the federal government, the department is improving its alignment of cybersecurity, risk management policies, procedures, and guidance with NIST. DoD CIO published in March a policy on cybersecurity, 8500.01, a policy on risk management framework for the DoD information technology, 851001. The risk management framework provides a structured yet flexible approach for managing the portion of risk resulting from the incorporation of information systems into mission and business processes. Implementing these two policies will normalize cybersecurity across the department. The cryptographic interoperability is critical for cyber systems dependent on equipment from multiple vendors. Interoperable strategies must include key management, security protocols, security algorithms, and most likely policy. Commercial products should be implementing standards-based cryptography. Consumers and industry have an unlimited choice of COTS products containing cryptographic components from around the world. International standards are a key element of an overall cyber strategy in protecting the enterprise, such as NIST's proposal to adopt an ISO standard at the next FIPS 140-3. National security systems leverage cryptographic testing conducted by NIST in conjunction with COTS products testing conducted by NIOP, aligning with DoD configuration guidelines. Integrating cybersecurity into the fabric of the enterprise means leveraging this building block approach, evaluating cryptographic algorithms and modules used in COTS products, and properly configured for the overall enterprise architecture. Whether developed commercially or by the government, cryptography plays an important role in how the department securely shares information with mission partners and other federal organizations. Our federal partners across the civil agencies and the IC rely on cryptography to protect internal radio and web communications, communicate domestically and abroad, ensure interoperability across the government. Cryptography can be found at the tactical edge, protecting the movements and operations of small units of U.S. and coalition forces. Is deeply entrenched at the operational levels of the command where it protects radio networks as well as activity on the web. and it is critical at the strategic and at the level of national command authority. Cryptography also protects the newer communication structures that facilitate agile, secure information sharing across mission partners and federal partners as we transition from traditional communications to accommodate today's information sharing needs, whether developed or furnished by the government, developed by industry with the government, or developed entirely by industry with government evaluation and validation. Cryptography plays a critical role within the DoD in the context of today's cyber warfare. So, as I mentioned earlier, we have strong partnerships with industry and international partners on our cyber guidelines. We have a program called the Defense Industrial Base Information Assurance Program. I didn't talk much about it, but a lot of the cyber issues that we have across the department, they're not just attacking DoD networks, they're attacking all of our known clear defense contractors. And so the DIB program actually pulls in more than 100 clear defense contractors to safeguard DoD information that resides on or transits the DIB information systems. Participating companies include groups like aerospace, cybersecurity, IT, geospatial, engineering, and transportation. It's a voluntary public-private partnership, but it does enable the department and these participating companies to share unclassified and classified cyber threat information with each other and allows them to respond to cyber activity. We're also working with industry in other priority areas, pursuing open, transparent, and flexible communications with industry in Silicon Valley and other innovation hubs, as well as expanding our exchange program. This is something the Secretary of Defense is pushing very hard. He really wants to build a different paradigm for cybersecurity in the future as far as individuals coming in and out of government, going in and out of industry. And so he's looking very hard on how to make that a possibility. I was in a meeting in the White House last week, and National Security Council meeting, and they were talking about from a nation perspective, and it was very, very interesting, and also kind of sad. They were talking about how many students are going into this field, how many we have to pull from. They quoted a number like there are something like 4,600 federal cybersecurity jobs that are not filled. They go out to our industry partners that support us, and that, you know, it multiplies. And then it was pretty interesting. They talked about a survey that they the White House had pushed out to the younger population of the nation, asking them how they felt about security in the devices that they use every day. And what they reported back was that it was very bleak. All of them pretty much assumed anything that they were putting online or putting in their device, anything that they were doing online, that there really wasn't an opportunity to protect it. And so, of course, what they're worried about is, does that drive them away from using the technology that we need to continue to propel our nation forward? So the White House is looking at some broader things, but I know they threw out things like a National Cyber Academy. They threw out things like we do in the military. People come into the military. We pay them for their education. Do we do something? So I know the president is looking at how do we actually tackle this problem. But I think it is a real problem for the U.S., and we really need to focus on it. So I think I pretty much hit all of my points. Basically, just to kind of recap, our approach to cybersecurity, really trying to get at that culture of cyber discipline. We have a huge workforce initiative. Trying to get to the right side of cyber economics, really make it much more expensive for our adversaries. I spent a lot of my life in NSA. In IED, working defensive networks and systems, and we always had this chart, which I love to show people, which is we spend 80% of our time working on the very basics. We really don't get to tackle the really hard, deep nation-state problems because we're handling the very simple problems, and then really building a layered cyber enterprise. And so those are our opportunities that we're working hard on. I think we're making progress. I'm very happy by the amount of emphasis is placed on it, even at the most senior levels in the department. And I'll tell you, this is kind of a first time because we used to have to go in and educate people all the time. Now they want to know what's going on and how they can solve the problem. So I know you probably agree with Paul. There's going to be some bad things that happen. It's going to get worse before it gets better. But I think at least we have the right focus on it. So with that, I'm willing to take I'm willing to take any questions. But please don't ask me about embedded crypto module algorithms.
So two questions here. What do you think is being done about sort of the pay scale differences between hiring into the government versus what, you know, a cybersecurity researcher can get in the private sector. And a second one, I read somewhere that there was a thought brought up about a national cybersecurity reservists program, mm-hmm. sort of like the National Reserves and the Army and things like that. So those are the two things. I was wondering if you'd heard about that or had any interesting things or anything from the White House on that.
Yeah, so I don't think I've been in a meeting talking about the workforce where we haven't talked about the pay scale and the discrepancy. And there's actually some activity going on in that area. And they're looking at different pay scales. They're looking at accepted service. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but there is the ability in the government when there's a critical skill and you need it to actually pay that person more money. So, but it would be a lot in this case. It would be a lot of people. I'm sorry, I forgot your second question already.
The National Reservists.
Oh, the National Reservists. So that is kind of, that's been brought up and that's been talked about, and that's also part of kind of the conversation with the National Cybersecurity Academy that they're talking about. Like putting people through a military school and then maybe you owe us 3 years or something like that, or you're going to reserve. So, I mean, all those are things that are being talked about. I have not seen any decisions. There hasn't been any decisions, but everybody's really looking hard at it. The White House has two different efforts. They have one focused right now on the federal government and what they can do, and then they have one focused on the nation at large, and that's where they're kind of looking at those issues. So not even just really pulling that skill set into the government, but really pulling it into the nation. Yes.
Good morning. Over time, I came to love and somewhat understand the somewhat unsexy term information assurance. And it made sense to me because of the way it was described and decomposed. I understood what it meant to assure confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Can you provide any insights into the motivations behind the change from information assurance mm-hmm. to cybersecurity?
I think more political cyber. So, you know, the Pentagon is a very political place, right? And so the buzz became cyber. Cyber became the word. And I think a lot of people think cyber is broader than information assurance. I've had this conversation with Kurt Dukes, right, because he runs the Information Assurance Directorate okay. at the National Security Agency sure. and talked to him about, you know, should we move the name or change the name or something like that? A lot of people think it's broader because it's just this a bigger, different ecosystem. And for some reason, it caught,
okay.
right? It caught. And we have CyberCom, right? The Department of Defense created a brand new command. Lots of people to just focus on this activity, and I think it caught. And so then it's really, how do you assure the cyber environment?
Sure. I just continue to wonder if in catching on from maybe a marketing perspective and you know, kind of buzzwordy appeal, if we've actually infused more ambiguity into the environment by going to that definition. I don't know.
I think it's certainly broadened it because
sure.
it's brought a lot more things in it. So in that case, yeah, I would agree with you. It's actually broadened it. But I think maybe it's given a more holistic view of
okay.
it.
Thank you.
So, I mean, it's kind of surprising, but one of the things that we're working really hard is cybersecurity, IA, and weapon systems, right? They're all connected. I mean, in the past, they're like, no, we're not communicating. Really, you're not communicating with anything? You're not connected? You're not? Really? How does this happen? You start talking to their mission, and they're connected to everything. So so it's actually broadened it to everything. And it is. It's like I kind of mentioned. It was ComSec, CompuSec, InfoSec, information assurance. This is kind of the buzzword of the century, I think.
So you talked about trying to get homogeneous systems you can manage, which is kind of the problem today. But if I look forward a few years, there is connectivity and basically eavesdropping capabilities going into almost every device you can imagine. You know, Cisco has a prediction of 50 billion connected devices 5 years from today. And so the fire alarm and the light bulb and things like this will be talking to the cell network, listening, watching, with firmware written by some guy sitting in Taiwan who's under a deadline and has to ship something out the next week. Do you think you can keep doing this, or is it something where is there a solution to that problem that works for you being homogeneous, or if not, are there things that you are being prioritized, for example, to help that engineer in Taiwan not screw up the security as badly so that product can be usable in your buildings and in your, you know, as faucets in your bathrooms and the fire alarms and so forth?
Right. So I think across the department and across the community, we have all of those things going, right? I mean, so where I sit at a very high level policy process level. So I'm talking about the big things that we're doing. But there are we have tons of money we spend in research in all of, you know, in all of those areas that you're talking about. We have tons of money that we have people looking at things like you guys talked about earlier, hardware roots or trust, and what do we get from those. We're spending a lot of money with mobility. I told you we have 260,000 smartphones. We're looking at apps and how we can actually have secure apps in a secure app store. We're looking at all the things, but we're also looking at, do we segment, right? Do we segment better than we have today? Because I don't think we're going to get to the point where we can have that type of infrastructure that you talked about on the same network with our mission systems and protect them to the same level. Maybe, but we're really looking at a different paradigm. Right? I mean, so, you know, one of my kids was telling me something about, I don't even remember the model of the car, but now you can control all the stuff on your iPad. Immediately, I think, oh, my God, who else control all this stuff on my iPad, right? But, you know, we have to figure out how to segment the stuff that's really mission critical. None of you want our nuclear command and control on the same network that's doing the fire alarm, right? You want that very segmented, very separate. And so we're looking at many of our mission systems and talking about stuff like that.
Hi. You know, I remember years ago talking with Brian Snow, who's been retired for some years from NSA's IAD. You know, Brian said that the budget available for the SIGINT side of the house was quite a bit higher than the budget available for information assurance. And with that higher budget also comes more political control and more just ability to get their way. And it seems to me that these two sides of the house are in conflict because, you know, right now it's all offense and very little defense. And these vulnerable systems, the thermostat that can be a stepping stone into either the Iranian gas centrifuges or the American networks that we're going to depend on for our defense. We need to have that side of the house exercise less control over the rest of the, you know, the rest of society and your side of the house, and when I say that side of the house, I'm also talking about the FBI, you know, law enforcement perspective, what Britain is doing now to lock out, you know, some kinds of crypto from Britain. Every time they do that, they're making it harder and harder to protect ourselves. You know, all that stolen information from personnel for their security clearance interviews and all the blackmail material that's in there when they admitted their dark secrets to the interviewers, all that's going to fall into the hands of the Chinese, who are going to use it to develop human assets within the American classified world. And then, even if we fixed all the computer network problems, they would still have those, you know, human assets that were there because we created an avenue for them to develop them by stealing all of their most sensitive information. This is a terribly lopsided situation. And every time we have, you know, James Comey complaining about end-to-end crypto is bad and the NSA SIGINT side developing all of these abilities to break into things without sharing that information with your side of the house to enable us to harden ourselves from against those kinds of attacks, you have a side that is looking out after their own narrowly defined interest at the expense of the overall security of the nation. And we got to do something about this, you know. Somehow the information assurance side has got to get more political influence over the other side, or else maybe the agency has to be split in two.
Not sure how you would like me to respond to that. Okay, so the only comment that I will give to that, I do not think we spend near enough money on cybersecurity, and I agree with you. We don't spend near enough money on it. Across the department, across the agency, all of our budgets are getting cut across the department, but and I think the way that maybe we have to solve some of this from a cybersecurity perspective is just continue to partner better across industry, across government.
We have to take the techniques that they develop and use them part in the rest of our systems. Since we buy a lot of civilian-based products, those civilian-based products are going to have to get hardened, and the people that have the information available to know how to harden it are the people that aren't going to tell us.
So I think, I can't say too much about this, and I'm not really in an NSA position right now, but I believe Admiral Rogers is really looking at how to make both sides of the House make each other's mission more robust, and that probably leans more toward the way you were talking about.
We have the last question here.
Much simpler question, less philosophical.
Okay.
At the beginning, you mentioned that you're moving away from passwords and user IDs to a two-factor authentication with a government-issued ID. Two-factor authentication is traditionally something you have and something you know. Government ID would be something you have. What's the other factor, and why did you choose it?
Yes, it's a PIN that actually unlocks it, yeah. So.